Hello, and welcome to our second podcast for How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff. And today we have Clarissa Hudson and
Simone McCullum.
Lloyd isn't here today, I'm sorry. So, for our podcast today, we're going to start with a quote from the book, front cover, and it says, "Round numbers are always false," by Samuel Johnson. And to me, it felt like when he said that, he was saying that whenever you round a number, that automatically makes it untrue because it isn't the actual number that you were given.
I agree. I also believe that round numbers are always false. Even though they're a lot easier to do, they are not really realistic. It's not a realistic way to view information. The best way to view it is with exact numbers, no matter how many, like how many millions of numbers are after that decimal point.
But it makes it really interesting because a lot of times people, when they see a really exact number like 15,298.32, they're like, oh, that can't be right. But in actuality, that's more accurate than someone who rounds the number.
So I wanted to talk about one source of sample bias that was mentioned in Chapter 1. Where they said the average Yaleman class of 24 makes $25,111 a year. I guess that was kind of appealing. I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't really think $25,000 is, you know, a vast amount of money. But maybe in that time period it was. I'm not sure. Or I don't know if it's the future. I don't know what 24, maybe 1924. Is it 2024? Like, I can't really, you know, tell. But I think that when people word something like that, like in this manner, it kind of makes you think like, oh, maybe I want to go to Yale. Maybe I should.
Yeah.
Or maybe I don't want to go to Yale. I mean, depending on how much money you plan on making, like if you get this, like this visual of how much you'll make in the future just by going to Yale, even though that's not true because you have millions of, I mean, not millions, but you have hundreds of majors you can go into making different amounts of money. I mean, it's a lot of factors that can go into it, like did you go straight into school afterwards, things mm-hmm. like that. So I feel like numbers like this, it tricks people, but it's also something important to know.
Yeah, and at the same time, it was like maybe they only got the popular people who are like really big businessmen or did the majors that really paid a lot compared to someone who just went into education or someone who decided to be a nurse. So you have to really, I guess, go behind the scenes and find out who exactly are the Yale men that, or Yale women that they interview for this number.
So I'm going to put the second paragraph on page 18 into my own words. The quote is, "A river cannot rise above its source." And to me, this means that you can't get something more out of what you already have, which is not true. This paragraph elaborates on this by concluding that in different data sets, we're able to get way more information than what we've been told, thus saying a river cannot rise above its source cannot be true all of the time. I mean, sometimes you get a problem where, like, there you can clearly identify, like, this leads to this and it's nothing more, but yeah. Most of the time you're able to dig deeper and find different meanings for different conclusions you can make from your numbers.
I guess I'm going to go into explaining why advertisers often rely on a very small sample to substantiate their claims. And when I was reading the book, I kind of saw that people use a very small sample size because they want their data to come out looking a certain way. They want their company to look like they're having profit that's not too much profit to make somebody doing something shady. So they really just go and pick out certain people that they want and certain, I guess, items and aspects that they really want to bring out to draw people in and not turn them away. Because if you go to a company and their data shows that majority of people don't like their food, they're not going to show you that because then you yourself won't buy their food. So they make it look like, and they only interview people who actually do like their food so that you'll end up thinking that, oh, this is a good product. So you'll go and buy it yourself.
I'm going to elaborate on what the author means on page 45 when he says, "Hardly anybody is exactly normal in any way." And what I took from the quote was, there are plenty of ways to view outside factors that can screw up data and paint different pictures. So nothing or no person is always normal all of the time, just like data. A clear example of this can be looking at data that suggests people who go to sleep before 10 receive higher test scores. Sure, sleep is important, but other factors can influence this conclusion. Mm-hmm. Things like what they ate the night before the test, what they had for breakfast, what they did in the morning, etc. So, I mean, I don't really think that anything is normal. Nothing is going to be perfect. There's always different outside sources, unless you have, like, a controlled environment where every single thing is the same. You might be able to say that it's normal, but I don't think that's a conclusion you can make all of the time.
And that also ties into, I think it was Geisel's norms, where they were talking about how a baby should start crawling or walking by a certain age, and you really can't dictate when a child should or should not be able to do something because each person is different and each child develops at their own pace and also depends on their environment and factors that we don't see, like Simone was saying. So you really can have no norm in life.
I found a example of a misleading graph. I got it from StricklerWMS.Weebly.com. And basically, it's a picture of a PS3 and a picture of an Xbox 360. And it's saying what they're trying to measure is a preferred GTA version percentage. What that is, I'm not really sure. But looking at this graph, I can obviously tell that this graph is misleading. I mean, you see the PS3, and I guess it has more area. So you would assume that, oh, I need a PS3 over Xbox 360, when in reality, that's not true. They just kind of made the PS3 bigger than the Xbox 360. It's not really telling me what I need to know. Maybe this number is correct, but once again, the area is still larger, so maybe there needs to be a control variable to make sure the area is the same, but, you know, it will have different percentages of the GTA.
My misleading graph was from Passy's World of Mathematics, and it had a bunch of different charts and videos and graphs, and one that really stuck out is where they were comparing days of 2 years from 2007 to 2008 of when they had freezing temperatures, and they changed the scale of the temperatures. Like, it went from 81 to 85 on one graph. On the other graph, it went from 20 to 100. So if you look at the first graph, you would think, oh, these days of freezing temperatures is really different. There was a really big rise in freezing temperatures from 2007 to 2008. But when you look at the second graph, there isn't that much of a difference. It's only like a couple, like maybe 2 days that were more in 2008 and 2007. So depending on what graph you look like, it'll represent your data differently.
I was looking on the Gizmodo, I think that's how you say it, website that Mr. Miles suggested we view when talking about the book. And, I'm seeing some graphs that really don't make sense to me, but I guess the point is it's not supposed to make sense. These are supposed to be, exaggerated examples, like, the one, I hate Bush, so it just immediately made me look at it, was if Bush tax cuts expire. So, you have 35% now, and then it said, well, then, whenever they did the mm-hmm. story, and then it has January 1st, 2013, is 39.6%. When, like, I don't know, but it just looks really dramatic just because the way they spread out the percentage is... Mm-hmm. It's really small, so it would make it seem like now, okay, like, oh my God, it's so good, but in 2013, it's going to raise or whatever, and, I mean, you could obviously tell that this is an exaggerated graph. Like, it doesn't make me want to believe what they're saying just because it's so dramatic.
And also, I really would have preferred they put an actual date and not just the word now, because what is now? Is now, like... 2025? Is it 1982? Like, it makes it really not able to understand all the of what's going on to people who are just looking at it like us without actually knowing the whole situation.
I also wanted to talk about an example on page 79 where it says, it was reported that the number of deaths chargeable to steam railroads in one recent year was 4,712. That sounds like a good argument for staying off trains, perhaps for sticking to your automobile instead. But when you investigate to find what the figure is all about, you learn it means something quite different. Nearly half of those victims were people whose automobiles collided with trains at crossings. The greater part of the rest were riding the rods. Only 132 out of the 4,712 were passengers on trains. So, I mean, if you would have told me this, like, wow, 4,712 people, like, you know, died from riding the train, I would be like, wow, like, maybe I don't need to be on the train.
I shouldn't do it every day.
But once
no
you
more.
Dig deep, I mean, I feel like when people give these numbers, they also need to tell us what's happening around it. Like, don't just tell me that 4,000 people died, like, by train without saying, like, mm-hmm. oh, well, this amount of people died because their car collided with the train.
It's
not necessarily because, they were on the train, you know what I mean? So I really like this example because it helped me break down my point where I say I need to know about those outside factors. Yeah. And it also allows us to know that it's really easy to lie with statistics. Like, you'll find that one person who's probably like, wow, like, maybe I don't need to do this, that, and the third. I need to change my whole lifestyle because of this one statistic, but they don't really know all that goes into it.
Like, if I, like, me personally, because I ride the train every day, like, if I knew that, like, almost 5,000 people died just from being on the train every day, it would make me not want to get on there. But when I actually find out only 132 really died, I'm just like, oh, that's light. That's nothing. Like, they make it so that people are, like, they want to waver from what they usually do in their usual life. Because maybe this is a company that wants to get people to ride their cars more so they can go use gas more than being on the train and not being able to, like, be involved in the economy and stuff. But it depends on, it makes it people really not want to do things. And going on that website that Mr. Miles had us on, there's another thing for the 2012 presidential run where it says 70% back Palin, 60% back Romney, and 63% back Huckabee. And that doesn't add to 100%. So that's kind of throwing me off just right off the bat, because if it doesn't add to 100%, then you just know automatically that your statistics aren't correct because you shouldn't have anything over 100%. So.
And also, I just wanted to talk about one more example of how I found the example of the misleading graph with the Xbox and the, the PS3. Mm-hmm. And on page 72 of How to Lie with Statistics, they have the Kresivkov, I don't really know how to say it, but, they had this really tiny cow in 1860, and in 1936, it seems like it's just like a grown man cow. And it's so exaggerated, but we don't really know what this means. Like, okay, we see the bigger cow in 1936, but what made it grow? You know what I mean? Like, what are the outside factors that made it that big? So I just feel like this is another example of changing area is going to change, you know, the statistic, which doesn't really make sense. And they also have another example of the rhino in 1515 when it's huge, in 1936 when it's relatively small. And it's just like, how does changing the area change the meaning of the statistic? And I feel like a lot of these visual statistic things that we see, I can't really talk about one that I've seen on a day-to-day basis, like at my bus stop or anything, because I don't really see those. But, like, I don't know, seeing things like this would kind of change my thinking. I think I might fall victim to it sometimes because, like, it's easier to see that if something is bigger, it makes us want to pay more attention to it. So especially if there's such a difference between big and small, we want to figure out that gap. And I think that's the book does a good job of explaining why we don't need to just look at the picture, why we need to dig deeper.
Because generally, if you see something going from being small to going big, you're like, oh my goodness, this is getting better, it's getting more popular, like, it's booming, and you want to, like, get involved in it. Whereas if you see something going down, then you're just like, oh, why would I even, unless it's something like poverty's going down, because then you'd be like, oh, okay, that's good. But generally, if you saw something going up or going down, you would like, if it was a really big, drastic change, you would be more interested into it. And, like, now I see myself, every time I see a graph, I'm like, let me check this out real quick. Make sure they're not lying. But, like, it makes you want to, the book makes you want to actually look at things more.
Okay, this was our second podcast. This is Simone McCollum.
And Clarissa Hudson.
Signing off.